86, and today I'm joined by retro gaming collector and YouTube legend Steve Benway.
Hi Mel, and hello everyone.
Thanks for joining us, Steve. I'm really glad we got you on the podcast, to be honest. I'm a big fan of your YouTube channel.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I'm sitting here grinning at the whole legend description thing because I just find that so funny. I'm just a bloke.
No, I mean, you've done really well on the channel. You've got lots of videos. I mean, I think the first video playthrough video I ever seen, I'd say playthrough, I know they're not reviews or, you know.
Not a walkthrough, playthrough, review, yeah, that.
Yeah, to be honest, I totally forgot that now. I should know it. I've heard it that many times. Was the terrible Afterburner 2 on the Amiga?
Oh, yeah, that was a little while ago. That was diabolical. There are two. There are two versions, and that would have been the Activision one. Very rough.
Yeah, it's really bad. Because I found out, I was just searching for a video of the Amiga version, the Activision one, because I'm more used to the American one, which is actually much better for a change.
Yeah, I can't remember if I've actually played the Sega one. I may have. So many, I can't remember what I played and what I haven't, and I may or may not have done a video of it. I don't even remember. But I do know the Activision one was appalling, and the American one does have the better reputation. Certainly, pictures of it look a lot better.
Oh yeah, it's a lot closer to the arcade. It does run a bit slow though, and it's got no sampled speech, whereas the Activision one, they seem to have not even sampled it off the arcade. They just actually made it up. It's got more sampled speech than the arcade game has.
Yeah, and did you notice they must have been trying to save RAM or something, chip memory, because the samples are really, really fast. Whoever's doing the speaking is speaking really quickly, so it's almost incomprehensible what they're saying, which is funny.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible. It's basically a port of the Atari ST version, and they've done that with a lot of early Amiga games.
Yeah, they did, and a lot of that was Activision. I guess they did them first on the ST because that was out earlier. I try not to play those. I think if a game isn't written specifically for a machine, it's going to look a bit rough, and well, those ones kind of prove the point.
Yeah, definitely. I just wanted to ask you a few questions, if that's all right, Steve.
Absolutely, fire away.
Right. How did you get into collecting and gaming?
Oh, that's two completely different things there, but I'll answer both, or try.
That's great.
Gaming. I got into gaming before there were video games. Some of your older listeners, and they would have to be, will remember these things in amusement arcades back in the 70s. They're called electromechanical games, one example is a racing game where your car is a little plastic model car that you can steer from left to right with a steering wheel, and you've got a track that's like a rotating drum painted on it, and there will be other cars painted on to the drum as well, and you supposedly got to avoid those cars as the drum goes round, not hit them with your plastic car. But it's incredibly primitive, and it didn't seem to make any difference to the play whether you hit them or not. But I started playing that kind of thing, and Pong came out in 72, and I was absolutely amazed and couldn't work out how it was that you were able to control something that was happening on a TV screen. That was like in a local laundrette, and I spent umpteen, I think it was 5p or something, 5p playing Pong. And I probably played every arcade game that came out or I could get my hands on, or when the fair came to town, that kind of thing. If there was an arcade in it, I would go play it. And I mean, I was like 4, 5, 6 years old, something like that. Yeah, and that's how I started gaming. Collecting, I kind of built up a very small collection back in the 80s. I got a ZX81, which died, and then I got an Atari 2600, Atari 600 XL, and an Electron, and an Amiga, several Amigas, just to use them. There was no conscious decision to collect them. But then by like the mid-90s, I think it was 97, I started realizing that all these old 8-bit machines were knocking around really cheap. ended in maybe another decade or so, they might be worth something. They might be museum pieces, I don't know. But as they were really cheap, I thought, I'll start buying these. They were easy to find at car boot sales. They're a lot harder now, but I mean, I picked up that Commodore PET that I've got in my collection for £10 at a car boot sale.
Oh, that's really good.
I was pleased. It was nightmarish carrying it around because it was the first thing I bought. I didn't want to risk someone else buying it, so I bought it right there and then. But yeah, it was heavy.
Yeah, it looks really heavy. I've seen that on the video. I didn't even know that computer existed, to be honest. I've been quite surprised with the computers that you've actually got. So a lot of them I've never even heard of.
This again comes down to being an old git. When I was in school, there was this lad, Richard Stone. Don't know whatever happened to him, but he was like the class geek who really knew his stuff with computers. And he would come into lessons with these computer magazines, and he'd sit there reading them and reading the specs. And I don't know, I think I was probably the only other person in the class who found it interesting, but I sat there listening and looking at the pictures and thinking, that's really cool. And the names of the things stuck in my head. So even if I didn't actually know what they did or what they were capable of, when I see them come up on eBay, I'm like, I remember that. And I go and buy it if I can.
Yeah, I've owned a few systems myself, but I always, well, at the time, because obviously I was a teenager and that, and I sold them to get the next best one sort of thing. Originally I had a Commodore 64, no, I tell a lie, I think I had a VIC-20 first, I'm quite sure of that. Then I got a Commodore 64, and then I just, after that, I sort of went onto the consoles, with your favourite, the NES. Yeah, I know you don't like that very much. I can't say I blame you.
I have... My views on the NES are kind of... I totally understand its importance to gaming history, especially in America. But, you know, where I was at when that was released in the UK, we had lots of 8-bit computers where software was cheap, so I just look at it. I was looking at it and thinking, well, it's a kid's toy and it's expensive. Why would I possibly want one of them? And it's hard to shake that kind of attitude. Though, to be fair, the games on it, the good ones, fairly kicked the ass out of the 8-bit games that I was playing at the time. But, the price of them kind of made me think, no.
Yeah, I never actually had a lot of games for it myself because at the time I think I was still at school and it was, you know, I'd just get one, say a birthday present or something, or I did save up for one and I ended up not being able to have enough money to get it and got a different game instead, believe it or not. I think I got Russian Attack, which was £25, whereas all the other ones were like 40 almost.
Yeah, the prices are scary. I'm trying to think what... I used to have my games sitting just here. I could have told you what I've got, but they're all in the other room now. I've got about 5 games for it, and they are good. The few that I've got, I mean, Marble Madness, I think, is absolutely brilliant on it. I prefer that version to the Mega Drive version. But it was like, okay, pay £30, £40 for that, or pay, I don't know, a fiver and play it on an old computer. You know, it's sort of easier now that they're at car boot sales or on eBay for a few pounds, but when you're looking at that kind of price, it didn't make much sense.
No, they were ridiculously overpriced. I mean, on the last episode I recorded with Andy, it was all about games controllers, and here's one I totally forgot to mention, the Power Glove on the NES. Now, that's sort of like a primitive version of how the Wii works, but so videos I've seen on YouTube, it barely works at all.
Yeah, I've seen the Angry Video Game Nerd video where he's using that. Never used one myself, never owned one, but they don't look great. And if you've got to resort to using the D-pad on the back of it, well, why not just use a normal joypad, I guess?
Yeah, it'd be a lot easier than messing around, waving your hands around and that. I'm not really, you know, much for this. You know, the new sort of gaming, I think you said it on the Friday Talkie not so long ago, whereas I don't want to be the controller and all this, because...
Absolutely.
I can't, to be totally honest with you, I can't be arsed with waving things around and that. Even if anyone's seen you, you'd make a fool of yourself anyway.
Yeah. We have a Wii. My wife bought one. And I spent about half an hour playing Wii Sports, and my first reaction was, this is cool. And within half an hour, I was like, right, I'm done. That was fun, but I don't ever want to play it again because that's all there is. And you know, if I wanted to go to the gym, I'd go to the gym or something. But that's not gaming to me.
No.
It's like a PE lesson in your living room, and who wants that?
Yeah, it's more of like, it's more of a gimmick as well.
Very much so, yeah.
I mean, it's fun when you first play it, but you wouldn't want to play it all the time or play it a lot. I don't actually own a Wii. What sort of put me off getting one of them is my dad's actually got one. And he knows nothing whatsoever about gaming, and he loves it.
Yeah, that, perfect example of how they are targeted at a completely different audience. I mean, they use the word demographic, if you like. Totally, totally different market. And, I mean, Nintendo have done a fantastic job in terms of making money by finding a market. But if you're a classic gamer, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of retro-style games on there that some people find very appealing, and I can totally understand why. But for me, it's, if you're not jumping around,
yeah,
then the games themselves are cute. I mean, that's always been a thing with Nintendo, and I don't do cute games, so...
No, and like we were saying before, on another show I did, about how Nintendo used to censor things a hell of a lot and try and police all the games sort of thing, with not allowing certain amounts of violence or blood or different things, you know, which... Because it's more aimed at the family, I suppose.
Yes, or it's a party console.
Yeah, that's right.
I can see the appeal. If you've got a bunch of friends in and you're drunk...
Yeah, it'd be great fun.
Yeah, multiplayer, whatever. I don't know what would be a good drunkard's game on there, but I'm sure there are plenty of them. if you're a solitary gamer, and most of the time I am, don't do it.
No, I agree, yeah. I've never owned one myself. Apparently, though, the hardware's good. They never, very rarely, break down or mess up.
Yeah, that's, well, ours have been absolutely fine, but then that might be because it's never turned on.
Yeah, that's something else I was saying to someone at work. Oh, that's probably because no one uses it enough to wear it out.
I've not heard any reports of problems of them. I think they're the most reliable of the three. Counts for nothing if you don't use it.
No, that's right. And if it hasn't got the sort of games, you know, you want to play, then...
Yeah, absolute kudos to Nintendo for finding something that sold well, but grumble, grumble, make a proper games machine.
Definitely. What would you say is your favourite console or computer in your collection?
Oh, yeah, easy. Commodore Amiga, the 1200... may have seen it, that big tower thing that I've got.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm an Amiga fan myself, but the one... Well, I've never actually owned one myself. My best friend used to own one, and it was the one that was sort of like the ST. Is it the 512 or...?
The Amiga 500.
500, yeah. What's the difference between that and the Tower one, then? A lot?
Quite a lot, yes. The one that I've got isn't an off-the-shelf. The motherboard in it is from an Amiga 1200. But I've added a whole load of stuff into there. It's got an accelerator card with a 68060 processor, which is like the Motorola equivalent power-wise of, say, a Pentium 1 or whatever. So it was quite quick by classic Amiga standards. It's got a Zorro bus board, which was like the Amiga equivalent of the PCI board. It's got loads of expansion sockets on it, so you can plug other stuff into it.
Yeah.
The CD writer, 32 megs of RAM, something, I can't remember how many gigabytes the hard drive is, but yeah, by Amiga standards it's quite powerful, and insanely expensive.
Oh, I can imagine, yeah, because it's older than PCs, isn't it? Like...
Windows 95 was the thing when I put that one together. The 500 came about, I suppose, Windows 3.1 was the in thing then.
Oh, right, I didn't know that.
They were around for quite a while. I mean, the 500 got into the UK in about 97. I'm not sure about the 1000. The 1200 came out about 92, I think, something like that.
Oh, right. That's a computer I would like to actually get an Amiga.
I totally recommend them. I would recommend the 1200 over the 500, though there are people who would disagree. You get some compatibility issues with older software on the 1200, but you do get to play the better games as well with the more advanced graphics, and you've got a bit more processing power, and they take less space as well. They're the same width as the 500, but they don't have the depth, so they don't take as much desk space, and they're just gorgeous.
Oh, they're definitely impressive. You ever played a CD32? I think you've got one in your collection.
I haven't got one. No.
Haven't you?
I like them. I like the self-contained, small, compact nature of them. But it never made too much sense to me to buy one, given the machine I'd got already, in that there's not... I don't think there are any games for the CD32 that you couldn't play on a, say, an Amiga 1200 with a CD-ROM drive add-on.
Yeah.
And since I'd already got Amiga computers, it didn't make any sense. I wouldn't have been able to play anything that I wasn't playing already.
Yeah, well, I can understand that. And some of the CD32 games, it does actually come up to type in your name on the scoreboard, and obviously it hasn't got a keyboard.
I didn't know that. That kind of makes me chuckle, because Commodore made that mistake with the C64 GS.
Yeah, exactly the same sort of thing, because I'm pretty sure it was on Total Carnage. It does that. And it's just, as far as I could tell with that game, it's pretty much identical to the normal Amiga version.
Yeah, largely they were. I mean, some you had a bit of, I assume you had some full motion video. You didn't have to go through the whole installation process or swapping floppy drives, which is nice. Because the whole swapping floppy gets really old. But yeah, in terms of the actual games you get, they're just what you would get on an Amiga 1200.
Yeah, they were quite impressive at the time.
Yeah, it was touted as the first 32-bit CD-based console, which sounded really impressive. And then Sony brought out the PS1, and everyone was like, yeah, okay, thanks, we'll move along now. And it promptly didn't sell.
No, because I mean, I had a few. I think the first CD console I had was a PS1. I'm pretty sure. Then I got the Saturn afterwards.
Yeah, I only got the Saturn about 5 years ago, something like that. It was a tricky time then, because there were a number of machines out and they all looked interesting, and different people were saying different ones were better. And it was one of those let's wait and see things. I think it was about a year after the release of the PS1 before I actually opted for one myself.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky with my one. I got it really cheap off eBay, because the guy I bought it off, he had it, it was already modified. I don't know whether he paid to get it done, so it can actually play the imported games. It's got the 50-60 hertz switch, and eBay wouldn't let him sell it. They said, oh, it's something to do with piracy, which it's not, because you can't pirate certain games. So he said, oh, I'll tell you what, I'll sell it you for what you're bidding now. And it was like, I think it was £25. So I was like, fair enough, this is about a few years back.
Yeah, that's not a bad price either.
And it came with a few games. I mainly got it for Die Hard Arcade. And what games have I got? The Sega Ages collection.
That's a great collection, just for the... It's the whole sprite scaling thing. I wish Sega did more of that.
Oh, definitely, yeah. It was really impressive on... Is it Galaxy Force 2?
Yeah. Is that in the Sega Ages collection?
No, it actually isn't. I think I've got it somewhere on the Dreamcast, I think. I might be wrong.
Oh, I'd love to get my hands on that. I've got it on main. When I was playing it. Because Sega Ages, they released Volume 1 over here. Everything else, I think, is stayed in Japan, as far as I'm aware. I don't know how many volumes they released.
No, I think, that's about right. Because, I mean, I did buy that at the time when I did own a Saturn years ago, and they never released any of the other ones, no.
I know there's one, X-File 2708 has got an import one that's got, what's that kart buggy racing thing? I can't remember what it's called. It's a really cool sprite-based racing game. Power Drift, I think it's...
Oh, Power Drift, yeah, that's definitely a good game, yeah, that's a classic. Yeah.
And that's in one of the Japanese Sega Ages compilations that we don't get here, and I've got one of those, the Action Replay cartridge that you can plug into the Saturn, so it would be able to play it, but I haven't yet been brave enough to import anything from Japan, or I'm really hesitant when it comes to buying things from abroad. I've got one of my ColecoVisions from Germany because it's so hard to get one over here. The Virtual Boy, I think, is from America, and something else, I can't remember. One or two things from America and Europe, but not ever got anything from Japan yet.
What would you say is the worst console or computer that you own?
Gamecom.
Oh, yeah, I've seen videos on that. Yeah.
That is horrible. It's funny, actually, because so many people say, or at least they think the worst handheld, they say the Gizmondo, and they are so totally, totally wrong, because that thing's fantastic. With the Gamecom, it's weird because they had some really good ideas with the Gamecom. Touch screen, the PDA type features, internet access.
Yeah.
It sounded like what the DS turned into. But so you sit there and you read the specs, you read the description, and you think, fantastic, and then you use it, and it's like instant facepalm. You know, you're thinking, I've got to get a refund on this. It's so awful. And the biggest, really biggest problem is the screen ghosting. And you remember, if you've used an old classic Game Boy, the very first super big brick-sized Game Boy.
Oh, yeah, like the motion blur.
Take the motion blur on the Game Boy, and where, say, you move an object and the blur gradually fades as the object moves. On the Gamecom, it's just like the blur seems to stay there. You haven't got a hope in hell of seeing what's going on. It's terrible.
Yeah, I've seen the, I think it's a Midway collection with Defender and that, and they look really bad. The sound, it sounded all right and everything. It's just hard to see.
Yeah, the sound is ropey, but it is. It's the graphics, the blur that does it. It does render it completely unplayable on almost every game. You would never play it for fun. I played it purely for the sake of making the videos of it, and I actually buy the game knowing, they're going to be utterly awful. It's fun to make a video and say, look at this, what were they thinking of? It appeals to my sense of humour, but there's no pleasure to be had playing them.
No, I mean, I've done that with some games I've got on the Xbox 360. I knew they was like awful, and yet I got them cheap second hand, so I just bought them anyway.
Yeah. Some games are just so bad they're great. It's like some films are so bad. Plan 9 from Outer Space, which is so horribly awful, terrible, that it's fantastic. And you get the odd game that's like that.
Yeah, Vampire Rain, I think. I believe it's on the PS3 as well. I can't understand why Sony actually brought it out.
I haven't played that one. I don't know that one.
Oh, that's what that... It's sort of like... How can I explain? It's like Metal Gear Solid, but with vampires. And sort of... The graphics are not much better than a PS2 game, but it's on the 360.
That's embarrassing.
And on Metal Gear Solid, if you get caught, you can either fight back or hide somewhere. Whereas on this, the vampires charge at you instantly, knock you to the floor, and then hit you again, and game over.
That's not good.
So it's pretty unplayable. I mean, I knew it was really bad, because I played the demo on my brother's Xbox ages ago, and I don't know, recently I've just got into buying crappy games.
Yeah. It does surprise me that game developers will release something that bad. Like the sudden death and that's it, game over. I don't know how they can think that's okay. You sort of expect it back in the 8-bit days when it was like a bedroom coder.
Yeah.
And playtesting wasn't a factor. It was just like, okay, the program code works, so we'll release it. You expected some silly design choices or whatever. That's just how it was. But in this day and age, it's surprising.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect that at all. I mean, you'd think there'd be some quality testing, definitely.
At least a bit, yeah. I've kind of gotten used to the fact that probably 70% of the games that are getting released this generation are fairly mediocre, but I think it's always been that way. I haven't come across too many really, really diabolical ones. I don't actually buy that many anyway. I've kind of lost touch with it a little bit. Gran Turismo 5 came out, and I glazed over and didn't look at anything else.
I've never actually bought that one, because my PS3 actually died in the end, and I was getting it fixed regularly, and it wasn't even lasting a day, and going and getting a yellow light again. So I got it fixed, and I just sold it to game.
Don't blame you. I mean, if it's getting unreliable and you can flog it, yes. It will have been a bad one, because as a rule, they're not too unreliable.
No, I mean, my friend's had his one just as long as I've had mine. No, I tell you, it is the first sort of release ones that plays the PS2 games.
Yeah, the 60 gig one. I've got one of those. I've got one of those and the 80 gig one that came a little bit later. And they're both totally reliable. You'll get the odd crash once in a blue moon, or it'll lock up and you've got to turn it off to get it to reset. But I mean, never had a yellow light or any of that, so.
I mean, mind you, saying that, I did used to use it a hell of a lot, and saying that, though, I never owned a single Blu-ray.
My initial thought on Blu-rays was, this is fantastic, and now I'm like, actually, I'm not sure. I don't know if I can tell the difference. Was I buying into the hype?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got so many DVDs, I've got so many VHS as well, but I've tried to get a lot of them on DVD, and then when I got a PS3, I just thought, well, do I pay like about three times the amount what I got, say, for instance, with one of the Die Hard films that I've already got on DVD, or just keep the DVDs? And I just thought, oh, I'll keep the DVDs.
Yes, I do. I think if you've got a DVD, it's not worth upgrading to Blu-ray unless you're absolutely loaded. And then you just wouldn't worry about it. But I will buy a Blu-ray if a new film comes out that is an absolute visual beauty. I mean, the last one, actually, Andrew, my wife, bought it, Inception. Now, that's visually quite breathtaking. Yeah. And I think worth getting on Blu-ray rather than DVD. But if it's just like, I'm trying to give an example, something character-driven that's not visually going to blow you out of the water, it's like, just get the DVD.
Yeah, definitely. I noticed on your last video about the DVDs as well, you got Repo Man.
Yeah, great film.
Yeah, I love that film. I've never known anyone else who likes that.
Emilio Estevez.
Yeah, I've got that on DVD.
He, around that period, did some fantastic stuff. What's that one where all everything mechanical is coming to life? Like, and lawnmowers, and they're all shacked up in this petrol station or something.
Maximum Overdrive, that's
the
it.
One.
That's good. I got it on video.
Yes. If you've seen me recent videos, I'm currently ripping all of my VHS and burning it onto DVD, which seems a strange thing to do because there's no increase in visual quality. In fact, you lose some quality in the encoding, but I can't afford to buy all of those again on DVD, and they take up too much space on VHS.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I started doing that, but that was with my other computer, and my other computer wasn't reliable enough. It used to, well, basically switch itself off when it wanted to.
Oh, yes.
So I only done it with a few films, because there's still films you can't actually get on DVD.
Yes, definitely. I'm thinking of the one that, I don't know if they do it. There are a couple I have here that I don't know if are out on DVD yet. Axiom Mutante, which is a Spanish film, totally bizarre. And The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
Oh, Peter Weller.
Yeah,
I've seen that.
That's a classic. I don't know if that's on DVD or not, but it certainly wasn't for a long time.
I don't think it is, actually, no.
Highly recommended if you like weird nonsense. That's great anyway. He's very underrated.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, RoboCop's a classic.
Yes. And Naked Lunch.
Yeah, Naked Lunch is good.
Yes.
It's where you got the name Benway.
Yes. But that was more from the book. I don't know if you... Have you ever read the book?
No, I haven't. I've only seen the film.
It's obscene. he apart from the general obscenity, he absolutely butchers the language, so it is mostly kind of obscure, not quite nonsense, but you're sitting there thinking, oh my god, what's this guy on? And then you realise, oh yes, heroin, that's it. It's weird.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to try and find the book. I don't read that often, to be totally honest. I used to when I was younger. I just get really bad headaches sometimes now I'm older.
Your head would explode then, you probably should. And if you don't read a lot anyway, reading that would put you off it for good, because you'd just be like, what the hell was that? It's great, but very much an acquired taste.
How many games do you actually own?
I don't know. In short, I haven't got a clue. When I started doing the videos of them, I thought, well, I maybe got about 600, and I'm over 900 videos now, I think.
God, that's a lot.
Or approaching 900 or something. I don't know if I've done. But yeah, I'm probably, I don't know if I'm even near the halfway mark. I honestly haven't got a clue. I know I've got about 90 systems, but actual games, don't know.
That's impressive. Yeah.
The thing with that, a lot of them come, you buy a computer or a console or something like that on eBay, and it just comes bundled with a whole load of stuff.
Yeah.
Most, probably about 90% of the games I've got here, I've never played, because they came bundled, and there being so many of them, finding the time is hard. But so many of them are things that I never would have bought myself. It's something I spoke about in a video a while ago. It's like, how do people get to have such god-awful collections? Why would someone buy such bad games?
Oh, there's some really terrible ones, isn't there? Definitely.
Yeah. Partly, I concluded, either they just don't know what the game is like, they didn't read the reviews, whatever, they perhaps looked at the cover on the case, the picture on the case, or their granny bought it for them. Or they just bought what they could, because certainly back in the day when I was buying Acorn Electron games, they were really hard to find. So whatever was there, I bought it, didn't know whether it was any good or not. It was just like, there's a game for my computer, they're hard to find, I'll have that one. And usually it was rubbish.
I've never actually played on Electron myself. My brother used to have, actually he's still got it in the loft at my dad's, BBCB.
Yes, lovely machine. Very, it's interesting how little they're known outside of the UK, a little bit in Europe, across the pond, really not so much.
No.
They were a real major thing in the UK. Everyone knew what they were and had used one, even if they didn't own one, just because they were in all the schools, like the rich kids had some fantastic machines.
Oh, yeah, they had them at our school as well. Well, the middle school did, I'm not sure about the last school. I think they had PCs there, or I'm not sure what sort of ones though, because it was that long ago.
Yeah, they didn't have, well, computers, home computers didn't exist when I was in primary school. I am that old. I got to comprehensive school, and I think mine must have been one of the only schools in the country in the 8-bit era that didn't have BBC micros. You had the Link 380Z and a load of Link 480Zs all hooked up on a network, which apparently was really cool. But
yeah.
There weren't any games for them, so that was boring.
What would you say is the best game you've ever played?
Oh, yeah, Gran Turismo on any and all of the PlayStations. Just the Gran Turismo series, I love them. Every time one comes out, I buy it. Like religiously.
I've got a few of them on I can't remember what number it's up to, on the PlayStation 2, and I've got the first one on the PlayStation as well.
Yeah. When it first came, the very first Gran Turismo was such an eye-opener, because up until that point it had all been very arcadey. There was your God, what's it called? Need for Speed.
Oh, yeah.
And there was V Rally, which was, up until then, V-Rally seemed to be like the most realistic I had come across on the PS1. And I played that a lot. But it was still so arcadey, and I wanted something that really put you in there and felt realistic. And then Gran Turismo came out, and I was like, whoa, it was so different from anything else that was out there at that time. I mean, now there are loads of different things that try and copy it. Your Forzas and, I suppose, the Project Gothams and whatnot have got an element of that realism, but they're all kind of, they all followed it. They all came afterwards. But ever since then, and Gran Turismo 2 was great just because it was huge. Almost exactly the same game, but bigger.
And the graphics were really impressive as well, even on the first one, I thought, at the time.
Yeah, very much so. And I always played on the internal view as well. The external views never did it for me.
No.
It was just having that option, because, I mean, the arcade racers, so often it's like outside view and that's your lot. Having that internal view, and that became common on the PS1 anyway, that they'd already done it on the Rally and Need for Speed. But just the choice on the PS1 where you could have that internal view, I thought, fantastic. Love it.
Yeah, it's definitely a classic. I think the first PS1 game I ever owned was Ridge Racer.
Same here.
I got it from Toys R Us, and I got one of my friends to drive me down to Toys R Us from where I originally come from in Coventry. Because that was the only place that was open after I finished work. I think we went down there about 6 or 7 o'clock. And that's the game I bought straight away when I bought the console.
Yeah. Let me guess, would your second one have been Battle Arena Toshin Den?
Yes, I got that. And I also got the terrible Street Fighter the movie, because it was the only Street Fighter game on it. And Street Fighter Collection weren't out till I think, nearly a year later. Mm-hmm. So that was the only Street Fighter game at the time, and I was like completely disappointed with that.
Yeah. I think a lot of people who got the PS1 in the fairly early days of it ended up with Ridge Racer and Battle Arena Toshin Den and Doom as well. A lot of people is.
I had Doom as well, yeah. That's the first time I ever played Doom.
Yeah. I think the first groundbreaking game or something, game that really stood apart from all the others that were on it at the time was oh god, I'm going to blank now and forget what it's called. What's that thing with the whopping great robotic jumping rabbit?
Oh yeah, I know what you mean.
Jumping Flash,
yeah, that's it.
Loved that, and I gave it away when I upgraded to PS2. I gave a whole load of my, in fact I gave my PS1 and a load of the PS1 games to my niece,
and yeah.
She liked it as well, which is cool. And then, like, recently, when they started putting downloadable stuff on PlayStation Network, that one kind of was rediscovered as a underrated classic. And I sort of remembered and thought, oh, I wish I still got that. And I went and bought it again. And it is still that good.
Oh, yeah, it was a really good game. Definitely. I've got a game that is apparently worth some money on the PS1.
Mm-hmm.
My little brother's lent it at the moment, but he has assured me he's going to give it me back. Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
Oh.
So I've been told it's worth £150.
Lord.
If I knew it were worth that much, I wouldn't have lent it my brother.
I tell you what, I'm totally unaware of the value of games like, even, well, any games, really. The only one the Neo Geo games, I know there are some very valuable ones on that, and stuff like, what's it on the Saturn, Radiant Silver Gun. I mean, that's crazy,
yeah.
Much of that. But I have no idea if there's anything sitting here on any of these shelves that's worth anything. It's like, I follow the value of consoles and computers for games, but I haven't got a clue.
No. That's something I was going to actually say about. Out of all the consoles, we did have a post on the forum about what consoles did you wish you owned and never did, and that was what most people said, Neo Geo MVS.
Yeah, it's lovely. The games are too expensive.
And they're still dear now as well.
They are, yes. You can get them at £20-30 for the more common ones, but when you start getting onto the really good stuff, and I mean Metal Slug, really, insane money for those. Even converted MVS cartridges will go for hundreds. Metal Slug 1 for the AES, over 1,000.
Oh, yeah.
Frightening. I've only got two games for mine, and I just can't afford to buy more.
No, they are, I know what you mean, they are that deal. I always wanted one years ago, and then when I seen the price, obviously I couldn't afford it. And
it's tricky as well now, because most of the games you can get on the Neo Geo, you can get for other systems. Like, you can download them for the virtual console thingy on the Wii. And you kind of sit there thinking, okay, I've got this AES, and I could get this game and pay 40, 50, 60, whatever, £100 for this game.
Yeah.
Have it in a whopping great big book-sized cartridge, and they really are enormous. Or I could spend, I don't know, what is it? I don't know how much they cost on the Wii thing, but I mean, it's a few pounds. It's less than a tenner. And it kind of begs the question, what are you buying it for? Do you just want to play the game? Or is there an does the intrinsic value of that cartridge matter? And it's a really difficult choice to have to make, I think.
Yeah, because I've got on the Xbox 360, I've got one of the games you've actually got in your collection on the Neo Geo, Fatal Fury Special.
Yes.
And it's nowhere near as good, actually. I mean, you know, it's not as good playing it on that, which is obviously emulated, compared to on the real hardware, because I've never actually played a Neo Geo console myself, but I've played on the arcade version of it.
Yeah, which is the same thing. Yeah. And it's not as good.
No.
Is it graphically not as good, or is that down to the is it the controller that's just?
Well, that is it, actually. If you use I think the Xbox 360 controller has got to be, my personal opinion, the worst one out of any, because the D-pad is diabolical on it.
Yeah, I haven't used one. Definitely not having the original controller does wreck the experience. I don't know. What is it? Metal Slug 1 I've got on the Wii.
Yeah.
And I won't play it on there. I downloaded it, and I played it once, and the D-pad was fine, the two buttons were fine, but the game requires three buttons. You've got one to fire, one to jump, and one to throw a grenade.
Oh, yeah.
There's only two buttons on the Wii controller. So to throw a grenade, you've got to shake the controller. And that was it. I was just like, tossed that on the floor. That was a waste of a download. So yeah, and using the original hardware, definitely you get the proper experience. But some systems, I think you can get away with it. I mean, I absolutely love the PS2, PS3 type pad, and would probably be very happy playing. In fact, I am, because I've got Metal Slug 3 on the PS2, and it's great playing that on the PlayStation pad.
Oh yeah, I'd say the PlayStation pad is actually my favourite of the joypads, to be honest with you. I mean, I have actually got an arcade stick for the 360. I've modified it with proper buttons, you know, what's in the expensive Street Fighter 4 arcade machine.
Yeah.
But I still can't play. For some reason, it's not very good on that Fatal Fury. I don't know. Maybe it's how it's emulated.
I don't know. Funny thing, I mean, I'm absolutely rubbish at beat-em-ups anyway. That's about 3 seconds. But yeah, the PlayStation pad's totally my favourite. I never bought any of your fighting style sticks.
No.
I don't know. I don't know what they're like. Oh, say that. I mean, the Neo Geo stick is kind of like a fighting stick anyway, and that is awesome.
Oh, is that micro switched?
Probably. Hang on a moment. That will be a yes.
Yeah, it sounds like it, definitely.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Because they're really good fight sticks as well. Joysticks, I mean, sorry. Because they even released a version of them for the PS2, didn't they? I believe.
I don't know. I know there were things like it that were out for the PS2. It is an absolutely awesome thing, but it's kind of weird as well, because it makes more sense having it on the table. It's sort of not in. I don't like using it on my lap, because it's so big. I'm so used to having something in my hand, and it doesn't feel quite right having it on your lap. You want it on a desk or on a table or something, which is odd. I think you kind of get away from that with modern consoles, so it takes a little bit of getting used to, or that may just be me.
Well, I know what you mean, because if I play with my arcade stick, I'll never actually have it on my lap because it's too big. So I usually have it on the table.
Yeah, the whole Neo Geo thing I find quite just gobsmacking in general. I mean, I've never looked inside it or anything, but the console itself is really light.
Right, I didn't expect that. I thought it'd be really heavy.
It's about the same weight and just slightly bigger than a Mega Drive.
Oh, right.
Quite a bit of fresh air in there. All the weight is actually the cartridges. I mean, they're just... Oh, they're gobsmacking it is. It's like picking up a book. And you know where your Mega Drive, you see the edge connector inside them.
Yeah.
It's like about 2-3 inches, and you've got one connector. The Neo Geo ones is like book size. It's like almost A4 size, but it's the size of a small book, and you've got two of those edge connectors, and they're probably about three times the length of the Mega Drive one.
I never knew that.
I'm sitting here thinking I should hold one up to the camera. But
yeah.
That's not going to work.
No. Yeah, I never knew, because I've seen one in real life for sale in cash converters in Nuneaton, where near where I come from, and it was going for £45. I don't know whether it had a game or not with it.
For that, it doesn't matter.
And me, like a dick, thought, I won't get that. Like, I wish I bought it now. I think that was about 96, 97, something like that.
That would have been a steal. They sell... Well, I got mine for £100.
Yeah.
That was on a buy it now. I couldn't believe it. There it was on eBay. Buy it now, £100, fully working. And I snapped it up. It was like they'd just listed it, and I grabbed it. And they were like, "Wow, thanks!" And they were really pleased. Like they thought it wasn't going to sell. And I was sitting there thinking, "You don't know what you're doing."
Well, I was bidding on one myself, and after it got to 150, I just thought I can't afford to go any higher with it.
Yeah, it is such fun on eBay. You do get the occasional seller who actually doesn't know what they've got. So many people on there who are selling stuff, and they know what they've got is a common or garden, whatever, and they're putting rare on it and big silly prices, and some poor sucker's going to buy it and pay over the odds. And that's so common, but every once in a while you do get the seller who doesn't know what they've got, and you can get an absolute bargain.
Oh, that brings me to the question I'm going to ask you next, actually. How much is a heavy sixer worth? Because my friend, I was talking to him the other day, and he was on about, he had the Atari 2600, and I showed him your video, and he was like, "Yeah, I'm sure it's a heavy sixer," and then he was, "Oh, I'm not 100% sure whether it is, I'll go and look in the loft."
Yeah, I paid for mine £50, and that was a seller who didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
They were selling it for their nephew, who also, I think, didn't know what it was. The going rate, last time I checked, and the values fluctuate wildly, at that time the going rate was about £100 unboxed. Unboxed would be very, very hard, but there are so many people who sell the standard Chinese or Hong Kong made six switcher and say heavy six are rare, and people fall for it. They're not that easy to tell the difference at a glance. There's also the thing, there was a light six switcher made in Sunnyvale, and people will look at it and say, "Sunnyvale, great, heavy sixer, that's worth a lot," and they'll sell it saying it's a heavy sixer when it isn't. But about £100 for a proper one.
Oh, that's quite good.
That's what it was then, and that was about a year or 2 years ago. Say now.
I've just got a few quick questions from the forum, if that's all right with you, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Andy, the real Locomaniac, wanted to know, I think you might have answered some of these actually, roughly how much have you spent on your collection?
I don't know is the short answer. Yeah, I added it up once, what it would probably be worth if I was to sell each item separately on eBay, excluding games, the hardware, about 3,000. It might be a bit more by now, but that's like a really rough guess.
Oh, that's quite a lot. The other question he asked, Did you ever buy a game and think, why did I buy this crap?
Frequently. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I can think of one actually right now. It was, I can picture it. It's a first-person shooter on the PS3, and Killzone 2.
Oh, I got that for my PS3 and traded it in the same weekend.
Yeah. I'd heard good things about Killzone. I thought, well, this is going to be great, isn't it? No, I was bored within half an hour. It was just like, okay, I've done this 1,000 times over and I'm seeing different games. So, yeah, if it had been the first time I'd played a first-person shooter, it would have really impressed me. But as it was like, meh.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And on that, you've got some bits, actually turn the joypad like a Wiimote and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Don't like all that. I don't know. Nah. I've come across those, but I don't like that kind of thing. I know what you mean.
And the third question he asks, who would you like to go around your house and play games with? A, Angelina Jolie, or B, Megan Fox?
I don't know who Megan Fox is.
Oh, the one out of Transformers.
I can't really answer that. Neither of them are anyone I've paid a whole lot of attention. All right, Angelina Jolie, if she's dressed as singing out of Tomb Raider, that would be amusing, just for the pure irony of it.
And WrestleTube 1, or T-Hole, as he's from the forum, has said, my question is, did you enjoy watching back the outcome when you played some drunk Shemu the other day?
God.
When you yourself watched it back the next day.
I cringe when I watch that. I played it back after I'd recorded it. I played it back while I was still drunk, and I found it hysterical. I watch it now I'm sober, and I'm like, I cannot believe I called that door gay. politically incorrect, among other things, and it's just like, that's just such a stupid thing to say. But I cringe when I watch it. I said so many stupid things, and my swearing was like through the roof. I find it embarrassing.
I've watched that video 3 times now, and usually if something's on YouTube for, you know, more than an hour or something, I'll get bored, but I thought it was hilarious.
It was a chance, taking a chance doing it. I mean, apart from the fact that I might make a fool of myself, making one that long, I mean, attention spans on YouTube, when a video goes over 3 minutes, you know, you're going to lose people. So I thought an hour and 15 minutes, if I'm lucky, they'll have all gone by the time I'm drunk.
It's definitely got me playing Shemu again on the Dreamcast.
It's a good game.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Underrated classic.
Yeah.
Right, the other question is, what out of all your many British computers you love playing games on the most?
Oh, that's a tricky one. The one I'm most familiar with is the Acorn Electron, and I have the most nostalgia for that, but it's by no means the best. I'm not a fan of the Spectrum, because my ones, I just find them hard to tune into the telly, and I don't like the colour clash and all that lot. And things really, and I mean, it's bizarre. The ZX81 that I'm playing on at the moment, because it's so primitive, is fascinating how they get around the limitations. And I mean, it really does cripple you having to use that keyboard and keep your fingers on the keys. Because as soon as you take your fingers off, that's it, you've lost the keys. And I think probably the ZX81, though.
Yeah, it is really impressive, because I've actually seen one. My friend had one, but I've never seen any games on it, and I didn't think it could run games like it does. It is really impressive.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's so bad, it's fantastic. Like, there were some brilliant games on the Amstrad and on the BBC Model B, and I'm surprised I don't spend more time playing them, but since I've got the ZX81 out, I'm worried that I'm going to alienate half my audience who are like, God, he's playing more of this rubbish. But it's such fun because it's so basic. There's just, I don't know, it's like watching old black and white movies.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They are really good. The other question, he's got another 2 questions. What is your favourite and worst in-game music microchips of all time?
Right. The worst music I recall hearing in a game is on a... it's on this Famiclone thing that I've got. And it's a ROM hack of Mario. It's called Pandamar.
Oh, I think I've seen that video on...
Yeah, it's appalling. It's not music. So they took the notes and the sounds and swapped them all about. And, oh my, yeah, terrible.
I think the worst on any of the 16-bit systems that I've ever seen, you know, that I've actually officially been released and that, is the music on the SD's Final Fight. It's atrocious, honestly. I've done a video about that, and I muted the sound myself because I thought it was that bad. Yeah. Well, I left it playing on the video, but when we used to play it years ago, that's what we used to do, just turn the sound off.
Yeah. I don't think there are many games where I've found the music so grating. And the funny thing is, I mean, I'll do all of these videos, and the sound is there, and I'm talking, and people will comment when they've watched the video and said, how on earth did you play that with that god-awful music going on and on and on and on, repeating? And I'd actually been completely oblivious, didn't notice it, and then watched the video and realised, God, that really is bad.
Yeah, I can imagine, definitely. And then his final question is, at Christmas, when you are likely to have boozed already before making a video, do you think you will be making another one-off video like that Shenmue one? You would have been pre-drunk at the time. You roll out the Panasonic, even though you said it was your only... Although this time it would obviously be an accidental instead of deliberate because you were pre-drunk. Sorry if that didn't make a lot of sense. I'm just reading it how he's wrote it.
I think I get the question, yeah. Seeing as I've been mothered already, will I do a game while I'm smashed? To tell you the truth, I probably don't get drunk at Christmas. Because my wife doesn't drink. And it's really, really annoying if you're around someone who's drunk when you're sober. So I try not to subject her to me when I'm mullered, because I just talk rubbish and I don't... so, no, at Christmas, probably not, because, you know, it's time to be with the family and be sociable. And so, no, I probably will one day, sometime or other, do another drunk video. Maybe Shenmue, maybe something else. There are other things that kind of lend themselves to that kind of thing. But I couldn't say when or if it'll be a special occasion or whatever. I mean, I did ponder the idea because I'm coming up to 5,000 subscribers and thinking, oh, what can I do for that for a milestone thing? But it's too soon since I last got wrecked, and it really does take its toll. So I don't want to do that again too soon. One day, probably, but it won't be Christmas.
Oh, that's great. Anyway, I'm going to round up this show now, Steve. Thanks for being a great guest. It's been really good interviewing you. I was really nervous, but I think we didn't do too bad, actually. I didn't do as bad as I thought. I thought I'd mess everything up.
No, you have been a great host, and thank you for having me on here. It has been fun, and you weren't the only one who's nervous, because, like I said earlier, I'm just a guy. I just sit in front of a camera and go, blah. So, yes, it's been great.
You got any shout-outs, or...?
All right, I'm just going to name the people who are on the front of my channel, because these are people who I consider friends and who have fantastic Gamester81, ReviewTech USA, RetroGamerVX, Marlin Lee, Mark Vahir, Atari Leaf, Exile 2708, UE999, Maximum RD, Yipsters, DMU Review, Sinister Moon, Replay Retro, Rocky the Fishman, Jim Plays Games, and Nyson Games. Sorry if that was too many.
No, that's fine. I just want to say a shout out to everyone from the 1 Hour Monthly Podcast Show forum and website. Big shout out to Swainy101, Glenn83100, ZXSpecStar, and of course Andy the Real Locomaniac. Thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks, Steve, again.
Thanks for having me on the show, and thanks everyone for listening, and I hope I didn't ramble and bore you too much.